Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. Today is our last installment in our back to school theme. During this theme, we've tried to focus on new and creative ways to deliver digital content, either in person or virtual in person or other situations. So today we're going to offer another creative way to deliver learning content, and it's a way you might not have thought about. So in this case, this creative method isn't delivered in person, but it is a way to create either pre-work or interest in your ILT session and or like a good follow-up and sort of content nudges afterwards. And we're going to go a little meta on you. Today we're actually going to talk about podcasting on our podcast.
Very weird.
Exactly. So you hear Jeff here. Jeff is my guest who also produces our podcast. So before we even get into talking about podcasting and why we might want to do podcasting as a learning experience, Jeff, I want you to introduce yourself because our listeners need to know you have an extensive background in all of this, and that's what makes you an expert.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Helmus. I've been working in the background of the podcast since the start. Mm-hmm. My background is in broadcast production. I've been on nationally syndicated radio, and I've done quite a few uplinks for NBC and ABC. And I also do many podcasts just for even our 12-man fantasy football group. Yeah, so
perfect.
I am all over the place. I love, you know, any kind of audio engineering. I love the technical aspect. And there are so many little things you can do that make huge differences when you talk about the little technical things in the background.
Oh, yeah. And they make them 1,000 times better. So yeah, this podcast is far more polished because of you. So
there's a lot that goes on.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to dig into it.
So also, little known fact, maybe to some people, but Jeff is, I don't want to say into, that's not even the right word for it. You are experienced, you are a master DJ.
Yeah, I wouldn't call master. That was very nice of you.
It seems master to me.
But I like to keep it as a hobby. One fear of mine is making it a job, actually. But I do love the audio aspect and the energy of DJing. So it's a happy mix between technology and music, where I have the ability to use technology to blend the music together and create something new. And I love that artistic freedom that people might not see DJing as, but it's kind of a artistic release or a creative release in a way that other people can enjoy live. Yep, so
absolutely. And Jeff is not, he's not DJing your children's homecoming dance. He's DJing at some pretty impressive venues. And I think all of us need some sort of creative that, like you said, we don't make it a job, but it's a way to spur creativity, whether it's music or art or whatever it might be. And then that, I think, informs and makes us so much better at our jobs.
It's a necessary outlet for me.
Absolutely.
I almost feel like I need to get it out, you know, and I need to just go play high energy music and dance around.
I love that. Yeah.
It's a nice almost decompression in a way, which people might not see that as, but for me it is.
That would be super stressful for me. I love that it's decompression for you. Oh, man. In fact, we have a rule in our house. There's like no music before 10 o'clock. I love music, but I can't do it at certain times. So
I guess I can listen to very relaxing music in the morning, but I actually listen to podcasts, speaking of. So I kind of like to keep my mind focused on something, and so my mind doesn't travel. It focuses on what they're saying. So, yeah, let's get into podcasting.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so the reason that we, as Jeff and I have been doing all these podcasts, we were just talking about podcasting as a way to create learning content. And a long time ago, like embarrassingly long ago, you were probably in middle school, I'm not sure. But I mean, when I used to create my own online courses, that was a way that I kind of landed on to deliver. Now, it wasn't a podcast in that back then. There's no Spotify. It wasn't uploaded to Apple Music, anything like that. But I landed on sort of an interesting way to deliver content. You're creating an online course. Nobody wants to hear their professor drone on for hours, you know. So I would create more like a little interview situation. And I wrote the questions and I wrote the answers, but the students didn't know that. And then I would rope some, like often my husband or some other person, into like asking the questions and
for
making it appear interesting. Exactly.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah. And so again, while that wasn't podcasting in the true sense of the word, the audio brings something different. And it captures learners' interest in a little different way. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to spend some time today just talking about an interesting way to create content that's not read. And it allows your participants to listen on their own time. Podcasting has seen this big like resurgence.
Yeah.
And I think it can be written you know, in a lot of different ways. And it doesn't have to be ongoing year after year. So for example, maybe there's a new initiative. So you just want to create like one podcast that introduces this new initiative. Or maybe you're actually talking about embedding a short audio piece like every week into some kind of content.
And I think audio is something that I prefer when I'm working too, because I can't do something and read at the same time, but I can listen. And I know that's not true for everyone, but that comes back to your point, how you were making different ways to intake content back in the day for other, like people might not have thought about that, but that probably helped a lot of people. And so when I get content that's audio based, I can listen to it while doing something else at work. So maybe it's some town hall or weekly update with your company or an internal newsletter. Maybe that's just read off. That can live somewhere where someone can always just click on it, listen to it, and continue on with their day instead of having to focus.
No, absolutely. In fact, we often talk about wanting this podcast to be fun enough that you might want to listen like on the way to work or on the way home, similar with this. And I think all of us have times in our jobs where we don't have to focus as much, and this is a perfect place where you can just listen.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to eventually some of the you know, different ways that you can incorporate podcasting into your learning experiences, but this is not the hard thing for Jeff, but it's hard for me. I want to tackle the hard stuff first, which is like equipment. And it seems kind of complicated. Now, I am super blessed. Like, we're sitting in a podcast studio. Jeff does all the editing. But I remember back in the day downloading Audacity and then trying to like fiddle with it all and all that sort of thing. So I wanted to tackle that first. So you're the expert to start with, like at a minimum. What do our listeners need?
At a minimum, bare bones. To record a podcast or audio in general, you need a recording device and something to save it on. So that is a microphone and a computer these days. The computer can be more of a field recorder as well if you have maybe like a little Zoom recorder or one of those Sony handheld devices. Okay. But at a minimum, it's just a microphone and a computer. I will be listing a couple products in the show notes, but there are a few around $100 that might be a jump, but when it comes to some of these podcasting technologies, I mean, we are speaking on very expensive microphones from a studio.
Yes.
So when you get into entry level, you're going to be using a USB style microphone. And that's one that's easy to just plug and play in your computer. It'll recognize it as a device. And you can go in even your standard voice recorder notes on your computer and just press record and it will grab it.
So really, if you just have your laptop and then pull up your voice recorder app, whether you have a Mac or PC or whatever you're on, and a microphone. Yeah, that to me feels like I can handle that. That's manageable.
I mean, technically, you could just record on your computer as well. But at that point, I don't think you can consider that a podcast, because we'll get into what makes it and what doesn't. And is someone even going to listen to something that sounds like that?
Right.
A big part of it is making sure it's pleasurable to listen to. It's not distracting.
A little polished. Yep.
Yeah, the content pushes through, not the fallbacks of the recording.
Well, and I can attest to that 100%. Like, I listen to a variety of podcasts, and some of them, and we'll talk about what you listen to in a second, but so some podcasts you listen to for the authenticity, right? Like, it might not be the most polished, but the person is an expert, or it's sort of a grassroots type. I listen to a lot of baseball podcasts, and some of them are like super grassroots, like a college student. But I will tell you that there are times where I just shut it off because I can't take it anymore because like there's audio, there's like a buzzing the entire time. So there's kind of that fine line, and I like your recommendation. I bought a microphone. It's been years ago. It still works fantastic. Yeah. It costs less than $100. Yeah. So that's a good investment to make.
It is. And you can use it for so many things. And we're talking podcasts right now. But if you're even making calls with family or company conference calls, these microphones can be used in anything. So you can get a little creative. We won't go down those roads, but there are a lot of use cases you can do with microphones.
Yeah, I love that. That's actually a really great point. Okay, so at a minimum, we have a microphone, we have our laptop, we have a sound recorder.
Yeah, and so now you've recorded your voice. You've got, you know, like you said, the microphone, the computer. Now you basically have an audio track. From there, it's editing time. So I would say the next step is to look into free software that allow you to edit audio files. We've used a couple. Audacity is one I can recommend. GarageBand is one. That one comes standard on Apple devices. But Audacity is an amazing free product that will allow you to do anything you need to do to put up a podcast for free.
Yeah. It's been around for forever, constantly being improved.
Yeah.
What would you say But I'll let you go ahead and mention some others, and then I have a question for you.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's one other free one that I've used, which was Anchor. And I believe Spotify owns that. And they're simple in a way where they allow you to record, edit within the app, and then just upload to Spotify. It's kind of one of their plays to work in their atmosphere.
Okay.
But those are the free ones I'd recommend, and then I would get into the paid ones from there. Mm-hmm. What I use personally is Adobe Audition. It's part of their creative suite. That's pretty standard. That and Logic Pro. Logic Pro is a more beefy program used for any kind of audio editing. You can make music on there. I mean, technically you can make music in any of these, but I use Logic Pro to a lot of audio engineering in class.
Okay.
And then there's another one called Hindenburg, which is much more narration based. So when we're talking podcasts or even journaling, Hindenburg is a good option. A lot of people will go to that. It's a lot more focused where you open up Pro Tools and you have ins it's and outs and all these. Yeah, it is a full on DAW, which is a digital audio workstation.
Oh, okay.
So that is what these are considered. Editing softwares are DAWs, if you ever hear that, D-A-W.
Okay, that makes sense. Oh, good to know.
Yeah, and each one of these softwares have a similar look and feel. You're going to be looking at a waveform, which is your recording. And what a waveform is, it's basically the audio level of your voice on that recording track. So you can visually look at an audio file and you can kind of see where people are speaking, where there are quieter parts. And that is what you use when editing. So you can see a very high spike in something. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe someone that had a pop or a cough. Or you can see there's like a lull in something. That's where the visual part of editing comes in. It's hard to explain, I guess, over podcasts because YouTube is a plethora of knowledge on this, and that's where I learned everything. But even just editing like a video on your phone, you're trimming.
Yeah.
You're cutting off the ends. Right. And then maybe you can even split in the middle and cut off a middle section.
Yes.
At its minimum, that's kind of what we're doing is doing simple cuts to the audio and then getting rid of the middle parts and just making it seamless.
I like that analogy because obviously we're not going to spend our time really talking about how to in the software, but at a minimum, if you're familiar with taking a video, like you said, on your phone and then you're, you know, clipping different parts of it, similar look and feel in your audio file. And for some of these simpler tools, that's really all you need.
Yeah.
And you talked about seeing a lull. So one thing I know back in the day, and we even make use of it now, if I say something and I don't like it, or Jeff doesn't like it, or we need to re-say it, or I cough, whatever, I'll just pause for a second or two and then restart. Mm-hmm. So what that does is when we go back to edit, I can see there's a lull there and you're really good. And when you produce, you take notes. But I know when I used to do it myself, like that was kind of my cue. If I saw a lull, I need to jump in there and listen. And but then what that creates is it's not that hard to put two drops in and just clip. Like it's literally, you know, if you think about like Microsoft Office, people are familiar with that, right? Or anything, you click your scissors, you clip it out. So we don't need to go into all of that. But I guess I just want to assure our listeners that while you can go crazy and be super sophisticated, you can also be fairly simple.
Yeah.
You can find audio files all over to drop like an intro and an exit. And we'll talk in a little bit about how to make it polished. But the learning curve is not terrible.
No, no, not at its minimum. And then it's fun because the expert level is uncapped. In a way.
So it's anything.
Yeah, anyone can start. And then I don't think anyone can expert it. You know, there's you're never stop learning because the technology is always building.
Right.
Always new stuff to incorporate.
Right. OK, so before we talk about, you know, we talked about simple hardware, software. Before we talk about, there is some more sophisticated equipment if your company wants to invest. But before we do that, or your organization, let's talk about like some other little improvements things you could purchase that would improve the experience.
Yeah, some little things that go a long way on a new podcast. I would start off with headphones. So you already got your microphone and you got your computer. Headphones are really important, and maybe not how people might think, because what you want to do is plug your headphones into your microphone for you to be able to hear yourself and anyone else on the show so you know exactly what's being recorded. Imagine you recording something and then after it's done, you listen to it back and you have no, it was very quiet. Maybe it wasn't even recorded.
Yeah,
Or maybe there was a weird buzzing sound in the back or you were tapping on there and it was picking it up. While wearing headphones, you can hear that live and you can maybe go, okay, let's just quick redo that. Or maybe I'm not close enough to the microphone. That allows you to live adjust and then you don't have to re-record the whole thing.
Which is awful. Yes. And we've all been there.
And a lot of us already have headphones. You don't need to be crazy. Obviously, you'd like some sound suppression ones, but any headphone will help. So I definitely recommend getting headphones. Second would be a pop filter or a windscreen. And this is something that would go either over the microphone. Usually a microphone has like a metal mesh to protect what's inside. And sometimes they'll put a little foam thing over top.
Right.
Or there are these pop filters that are these circular mesh screens that will float in front of it. Mm-hmm. Usually attached to the stand.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And that helps any kind of hard P's or F's. Like if I said like pop, there's like, and I kind of emphasize that there, but there's air that flows through your lips with certain letters, and that wind will destroy the audio because microphones are based on vibration usually. And so when you're blowing into it, that is a high vibration and it's going to mute out any sound that's underneath it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so the whole point of a pop filter or a windscreen is just to reduce the amount of wind and action that's going into the microphone and allowing it only to pick up vocals.
Okay.
And so that'll help a lot.
Yeah. And some people are more prone to that than others. Mm-hmm. And I think that that can be a challenge. So that's a really easy tip to eliminate that.
And then on top of that, even just techniques in recording. So we don't look directly into the microphone. We point the microphone from the side at our mouths. So when we're speaking to each other, the voice is going past it and not directly into it. And it's picking up, you know, but these little things can make a huge difference.
Right. Well, I remember when I first started doing it, I was doing some reading, and a couple of quick things I picked up was that when you begin something, instead of just launching right into my intro, you take a deep breath and you kind of start to let it out and then you talk. So you don't have this like aggressive, like, hi, you know, you're like in process sort of a breathing and speaking. Yeah. And then another one I found super helpful is to avoid any kind of dairy product or carbonation.
Yes.
Because I found myself, right, like we record these all different times a day, whenever we have time. And sometimes I just had to clear my throat constantly or my voice would cut out.
Yeah. So that's like gum. Any eating and any drinks in the studio, because that'll pick up, like if it's like pop and carbonated, that's going to come up. So be very careful about what's in the office or the recording studio as well. So,
there's a ton of simple tips. So that's great. I mean, those are little things that could already taking your podcast above what's
the bare minimum. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what if my organization wanted to invest in something more sophisticated? Now, if budget was no option,
then call me. I would love to spend your money.
That's right. I love that.
Yeah.
But what are some ideas?
I won't go too in depth because I could make, you know, a whole series on this.
Yes, you could.
But the first recommendation I would make that is a higher end upgrade would be your microphone. I would remove the USB microphone and add in an XLR microphone. An XLR microphphone is one that uses an XLR cable, which is a much higher quality transmission cable. So it's going to be clearer. You're not going to get a lot of buzz out of it. And USB is just a digital signal, where this is like an analog audio signal.
Gotcha.
So the quality is much better. And then the microphones are much better as well, because they're just focusing on the microphone itself and not how it pairs with another object.
Okay. So that makes sense.
XLR is the standard. Okay. Almost every microphone you will find that's not a USB based will be an XLR based.
But I can't plug that into my computer then. So now we have to talk about another upgrade.
Right? Yep, which means you'll need an audio interface.
Okay, yep.
And that audio interface is what's going to translate your vocals from the cord into a digital process that your computer can handle.
Okay.
So we have a big board with, I think, 4 inputs for XLRs, which means we can plug in 4 microphones. It also has 4 outputs for headphones, but that is going to be required in order to do any because there's
to
no
go
way.
Together. Yep. Right. Okay.
So the audio interface is important. That might honestly be one of your more expensive purchases for this, because that's the brains of the operation.
Gotcha.
And it's also what's going to allow you to typically mix levels. Sometimes they're separate, but I'll list it as a mixer.
Okay.
So you have your audio interface, which translates it to digital, but your mixer, which will allow you to adjust levels. So let's say I'm louder than you. Mm-hmm. I will turn my microphone down, turn yours up. Or maybe you're in a position where there's under an air conditioning and is more.
Right.
There's a lot of things you can do to change how it sounds, and that's going to help so much in post. The more you can do while you're recording, the better it's going to be for post-production.
Well, so. It's just like everyone says, oh, you can just Photoshop that later. Well, not exactly. Right. The better you can make it to start with.
And even if I could Photoshop later, it, I'd rather not spend the 5 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the mixer is very important for live recording.
Okay. Can I put you on the spot? Like, just ballpark, like, what is a decent mixer cost? Or do you not?
Yeah. So you can get mixers for $200. That would be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. But you can get into the thousands when you start to implement the different features. We can even like, so the next one I would say is a headphone amplifier, which is what is built into our mixer.
Oh, okay.
They can be separate, but we have a nice one where it's all in one. So that's where we have more near $1,000.
Gotcha.
But this includes your audio interface, your mixer, your amplifier, and some of the cords, and even the DAW. This has editing software combined with
built
it.
Built in.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty good if it's all built together.
Yeah.
Okay.
But a headphone amplifier will be the thing that allows you to plug in multiple headphones and all your guests can hear it. Because your normal computer is not going to have that many headphone outputs.
Right.
So this allows everyone to hear their own voice, everyone else. And then that way you're not talking to each other and one person's got headphones and the rest don't. So when you're getting a big group, that'll be necessary.
Well, and I can say from experience, those dynamics are important because we've, had multiple guests on and you're trying to make it as comfortable as possible. So you really want people to be able to look at each other and it to feel more like a conversation.
Yeah.
And if one person can hear in their ears with the headphones and others can't, it just feels stilted. And like now you're recording something very formal instead of a conversation.
It's different for sure. Yeah. Another thing would be a shock mount. And honestly, I might even put this up top in the little upgrades you can make.
Oh, okay. What's a shock mount?
So maybe I got ahead of myself because a shock mount usually is on a mic stand. And I didn't recommend a mic stand, but that is something you should probably buy as a mic stand. We have them on the table, but I would recommend an arm, a boom arm. That way you can rest it above you. It opens up table space.
Right.
You can move it around. It allows you to maybe even get more comfortable in your chairs. You can lean back and put it toward you. But this is where a shock mount comes in play because a shock mount is what holds the microphone and it actually suspends it in typically a bunch of elastic.
Oh, okay.
So what it does is it removes the vibration that would make it into the microphone. So if I were to hit the table, that shock is going to go through the arm and then hit the microphone and the microphone will feel that. The shock mount will kind of suspends it in rubber bands in a way. And when it shocks, it just kind of sits in the middle of the rubber bands and it never feels that shock. So that's something that helps a lot with audio quality.
So we're definitely at this point, if we're investing in this, we probably need a location or a room that, because we don't want to tear down and set up the stuff if we're going to do like a regular podcast.
Right.
So maybe I jumped the gun on you. I don't know. I don't know if those are recommendations or not.
Well, I think that's a good segue. I mentioned a little bit earlier about mobile recording because some people do interview styles or they'll go to someone's desk even.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of fun things you can do with podcasts. So you can get a digital recorder that you can plug in your microphone to. You'll just need an SD card as well, something to record it on.
Gotcha.
But that'll allow you to be mobile. But that brings in your environment quite a bit.
Which is important.
So obviously this goes back to do as much as you can in the beginning of the recording so you don't have to do as much in post. Some of what we do in post is reducing background noises. It's a lot easier to do that with constant noises, maybe an electrical hum, a fan, an AC, something that's constant. But when someone's clapping or laughing, that's something that spikes out of the norm. So the editing software knows how to take out constant sounds, but it can't do, the loud ones. And that's when you're going to have to do custom.
So in regards to, obviously, we're kind of touching on now the environment, right? Like the room you're in or where your equipment is, or perhaps if you are on the go kind of a thing, it's a mobile thing.
Yeah.
What are some things we can do to improve that situation so that there's less work to do later?
Great question. So first, I'm going to recommend things like a pickup pattern on your microphone. So if you have a microphone that allows you to do different polar patterns, what that is telling the microphone where should it be listening in the space.
Okay.
And so I'll go through three common ones. Omnidirectional is your standard 360. It is recording everything around. That's really good for setting it in the middle of a room and recording a bunch of people.
Gotcha.
Maybe it's good for live audio, like nature sounds, atmosphere.
Okay.
That's very good for that. Then you get into cardioid pickup. And this is very common for podcasting. What this does is almost puts a cone in front of the user and tries to block out everything behind it or what the user is looking at. So you would set up two microphones in cardioid pickup pattern that face opposite of each other and they won't interfere with each other. So it's only looking at the person.
Okay. Yep.
And then you can do things like bidirectional. So let's say you only have one microphone, but you're doing an interview. That'll just pick up front and back, but ignore the sides.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So there are a few pickup patterns you can look up. Some microphones have them, some don't, but that is a little tweak that will help
because
that's going to help the recording quality a lot.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Cause I know even where we are now, we realized if we turn our heads and you need to, cause you're looking at your notes or whatever, but ours are set up to capture right in front of the microphone. If I turn my head, I mean, I'll do it now. It's going to sound a lot different.
Yeah. Cause otherwise it would be picking up my voice and your microphone.
Right.
And then you're just getting a whole bunch of double.
Right.
So.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And then I would say it's all about your environment. Like you said, soundproofing your room. What can you do? So do as much as you can to reduce background noise. ACs, heaters, fans, electrical buzzing, that all comes through microphones. And so thankfully editing software that'll easily allow you to remove some of that. But obviously there's only so much you can remove.
Right,
so
consistent
noises are easy to remove. Don't record around hard surfaces because audio bounces off of walls. That's why you might see like a band play on a rug. I don't know if you ever see it because that absorbs sound.
Yeah.
So as much as you can do to put fluffy things, couches, rugs, drapery, curtains. Those are some of the best things you can do to reduce audio. If you want to go into the budget setup, I used to use mattresses.
Oh, yeah.
Mattresses are some of the best sound reducers ever. I've seen sound recordings where they put three mattresses
in
a box, a half box, and they'll sit inside it.
Well, even smaller than that, I used to, those like little pop-up cubes. So they're for furniture organizers, you know, little like 9x9, but you can buy the pull-out drawer things that go in them, pop those up. And then I just ordered off Amazon a very small sheet of the like egg carton soundproofing, cut the squares, slid them in and put my microphone in the middle of it. Now that didn't really do much. I'm sitting outside of that, but it at least made an atmosphere around my microphone that eliminated it. Because let's be honest, our biggest challenge often is our colleagues who are awesome and amazing, but they're having fun, they're doing work, they're having conversations. Then sometimes you have to, you know, even just get somewhere where there's nobody else to do these things.
Yeah, egg crate foam is some of the standard. Even when I took my audio engineer courses, the entire recording office covered every wall, egg foam.
Yep.
So it's a standard. I would also recommend pillows and cushions.
Yeah, that
works. So like if you're at home, just set up your cushions in a little block, record into it. It just helps with reducing sound.
Yeah.
So to sum up that little bit, I would just say top tips, a cardioid pattern to pick up just your voice and reduce the noise.
Yeah, that seems really important.
A pop filter to prevent popping, a shock mount to filter out those vibrations, and then a mixer to adjust the sounds and levels of the mic. I think those are, you know, if you want to dial it down, that's going to make a huge improvement.
Okay. No, I love that. And one of the things that we wanted to tackle that first, because I think hopefully we've given you some good first steps at a minimum. And as you're building sort of this enthusiasm for your podcast and, you know, people are interested in all that, then hopefully there can be more of an investment from the organization to kind of up that level.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen if your podcast is boring.
Right.
So
you've got it recorded on some nice equipment now. You've got your file, but
yeah, the content, it has to be to be interesting and engaging. And so from your perspective, you know, before we talk about kind of some pedagogical things, like what are some simple things to sort of up the entertainment feel of my podcast?
Yeah, I think you'll notice most podcasts have their intro and maybe a conclusion. But when it comes to branding, which is near and dear to my heart, you'll want to find some music that maybe matches the feel of your content or the emotion you're trying to portray. You know, you don't want to come into a hard rock here. Like we don't have, you know, some screamo into the learning well, which we could, but.
Or on the opposite end of that, something that feels like elevator music and people are halfway asleep before they even listen. So,
It gives them a little preview of what's to come. There can also be little audio clips, little sound bites that you use. Some people, when they want to go back in a memory, they can play that little harp piano sound, or maybe you can do like a ba-dum-ts on a joke. You know, there's a lot of things you can do to add some flavor into your audio. And some of the best podcasts that I listen to are very good at soundscapes. And what a soundscape is adding audio in the background to support what they're saying. So if they're describing a story and they're walking through the city, you'll start to hear cars and traffic and maybe some birds and a train will go by and you'll hear maybe some people talking. That starts to put people into a scene where they can start to focus and really relate to the scenario the podcaster is describing.
I love that, because what you're really describing here is starting to build a learning experience, mm-hmm. right? So even though it's just audio, we're immersing someone into a situation, or like you said, a scenario that's yeah. really helping them think more deeply about what they're about to hear.
Yeah.
So which this is going to take some work, no mm-hmm. doubt. But I love that. And storytelling is one of the best ways for people to learn.
Yeah. But what if you ask someone a question and they need to think? You don't right. want dead air either. So right. maybe it's even like a ticker, like a game show, like tick, tick, you know?
That seems like a lot of pressure.
Yeah, well, it depends on your podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
But
that's right.
There are little things you can do to add on to what you already have to make it better.
I love that. Yeah. I think those are really helpful. And those are things that once you kind of get your flow, and again, we're assuming if you're hosting a podcast, this is something you're probably passionate about. It's not that hard to bring sort of the enthusiasm and right. all of that. But now these are things to upgrade it even just a little yeah. bit. One tiny little practical tip I will say. So sometimes we try to do three or four, like do a chunk mm-hmm. because we can, you know, use the studio, all of that. But I will say just from a practical perspective, I have found 2 is about my limit. So yeah. by 3, my brain is a little shot. Now, again, it depends on if I'm just interviewing someone and they're providing most of the content. Yep. It's not a big deal.
Right.
But
it's a lot of work. It's a lot of focus, and you're on, like, you're recording. So you got to right. be on your game. And so right. I definitely understand not overstressing yourself and hurting the quality of
right.
Podcasts you might record later in the day.
Well, that's the thing, right? But I could tell one time we did, like by the third one, I could tell my energy, like I was trying, but I could tell. Yeah. And maybe it was just me, but I'm like, this has been a long day.
Yeah.
So that's just a little
That's tip. A good point.
All right. So we're assuming now we've got some equipment,
yep.
you know, we're ready to go with that. One of the things that I would recommend, I guess, before we're going to talk about like planning your podcast, producing it, really from a learning perspective in this particular case. But one thing I would really suggest is that you listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I think that's so helpful to get a feel for the flavor and tone, what you like, what mm-hmm. you don't like. So, Jeff, before I talk about sort of like the design, I want to hear sure. from you. Tell me about some of your favorite podcasts, why they're your favorite,
yeah.
and then tell us about some you don't, maybe they're a turnoff. You don't really care for them, and tell us why, because I think that will inform our listeners really just from an entertainment perspective, yeah. what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. So I typically listen to podcasts around my interest, and I think most people do.
For sure.
I like podcasts that maybe give me an escape from an entertainment factor. And then I like podcasts that are immersive. Like we talked about soundscapes and just good quality. I listen to Radiolab, This American Life, ones that have extremely good audio quality.
For sure.
Multiple producers. Mm-hmm. I've listened to them through college. So I really like the stories they do and the quality of their recordings. I listen to things like Stuff You Should Know, 99% Invisible, Reply All. These are learning podcasts. So I love learning new things. And so they dive into these little rabbit holes and crevices in the internet, or maybe find someone who's an expert on something you would have never thought of. And I love learning about those people because, like we said, when people are passionate about something, it's so fun to listen to and get a perspective that you might not have heard before.
I listen to the Stuff You Should Know too. It's so fascinating. Just really random things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I never knew that before. And I should have.
Yeah. It's like, what are we learning today?
Exactly.
Oh, subway signage and why it's so important to New York City.
Exactly.
You know, I love that kind of thing. And then I like comedies.
Oh, okay.
Or people that can interview people with a comedic relief to it.
Gotcha. Like a Jerry Seinfeld, comedians and comedy.
Yeah,
maybe that's not one you like, but I just mean that kind of
exactly.
tone.
Okay. Exactly. And again, when it comes down to just interviewing interesting people, Joe Rogan gets a lot of flack for the people he puts on, but I enjoy that because they get an open platform to say whatever they want, and then the people can take it as they
you
want,
can
you know?
To not listen.
Yeah, I just like the fact that there's an open platform that I can go and listen to someone speak their thoughts, and I really respect that kind of podcast too.
Yeah, I listen to this podcast sometimes called Overdue. There's like 700 episodes. And they're two guys that host it. They're hilarious because it's essentially, here are books you should have read, but you never did. They're overdue. And so they basically, each week, one of them is responsible for reading it. And then the other one is responsible for like interviewing them. So to be honest, I've scrolled through like all these classics I should have read. I just found them really boring.
That's
I don't know. And then I'm like, oh no, I'm all caught up. Next time someone says, have you read War and Peace? Uh-huh. I'm like, well, Kind of, right?
Well, again, that's something I think everyone can relate to. Obviously, everyone hasn't read a book they should have read at one point.
For sure. Yeah.
And this is something where they can teach you about it real quick. I've been doing that on YouTube. There are movie summaries, like 20-minute movie summaries.
Right.
And I don't know how I feel about that, but it is kind of nice to maybe recap a movie real quick. So that's a cool concept.
Okay, so I'm just kind of reading between the lines here, the way you talked about the ones you liked. At least most of them are pretty polished.
Yeah.
I know for sure This American Life, you know, that kind of thing. There's a variety, you know, and I would encourage our listeners for sure to listen to different, between comedy and more serious things and just like trivia things you should know, random things. What are some ways that people host, not so much topics, right? Because we all have our own opinion on different topics, but the way that they're produced or hosted that you're just kind of like, I can't listen to that.
Yeah. When it comes to production quality, sound levels, so let's say if one person is loud and one person is quiet, I don't want to have to adjust my volume all the time while listening. If there's background noise, I'm an easily distracted person.
Okay, yeah.
So I need something that is well-polished, like I said. Or even if they have, this is interesting, but boring advertisements.
Oh.
When you get to the more popular podcast, you start to run ads.
Right.
And I really respect people that make their own ads or do their own flavor to them, where they'll read it off themselves and maybe relate it to the content they're talking about and not just plug in an ad.
Gotcha.
Because thank goodness for the 30-second forward
fast
skip.
Forward.
Yes. But I will listen to someone who puts an effort to tie in their advertisements into their show. I would say any podcast that is, for me, that is just too general or doesn't have a focus or a niche, because then I might not know what I'm listening to.
Gotcha.
Unless maybe that's the purpose of it, like a talk show. But I think there are very few that can handle that.
Yeah, definitely.
And then low energy, like you talked about, because again, you're bringing the energy to every listener. So if you come in slow, I'm going to anticipate maybe a slow episode or maybe a more somber episode. So definitely match the energy you're trying to portray. And I think one last thing is, depending on the type of podcast, the consistency of episode releases, because some podcasts might talk about live news. So you're going to want that podcast to come out the next day.
Right.
Whereas,
wait a week for it
to be produced. Right. So depending on the type of podcast you're doing, you might really have to focus on when you're dropping these episodes and the consistency of episodes.
Absolutely. Especially, I think, if you're doing this within your organization, you're trying to build this momentum. So that we'll talk about this in a little bit, the whole planning and all that. But you need to drop them consistently. They need to be at a certain time, typically, that works best. And I know personally from podcasts that I do enjoy listening to, you know, certain times around holidays or other things, or like I mentioned, baseball, right? Like there's lags during the year where you don't get as much. And you're like, oh, I need another one. And no, sometimes that's good. That creates that need, right?
Yep.
But just being consistent with that. And if you can tell the podcaster has sort of, it's kind of in spurts and here and there, and you can't really count on it, I tend to, you know, sort of move away.
It's hard to keep up.
I can't keep up. And then I don't know when it's coming out.
Yeah.
And I would just say, probably two other little things for me, or maybe, I don't know, maybe just one. So one thing I don't care for when I'm listening to a podcast and I've, you know, I've skimmed the episodes, I'm like, oh, I really want to listen to that guest. And then the person hosting does all the talking. Like, just be quiet. Like, I'm listening for this guest.
Exactly.
So obviously I'm doing that right now.
No, you're not, because you are also
something that annoys me. You know, I want to listen to the guest because they're the expert.
Yes. I would say it's true what you said, but I would say let the subject matter expert speak the most, but that doesn't mean the host isn't also, you know, as long as the host is asking questions to pull out answers to help, I think that's absolutely fine. But that's a great point. If you have a guest on and the guest doesn't get to talk, that's probably the reason why you're listening to that podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And so honestly, to sort of segue, we're talking about subject matter experts. We did want to, in a little bit, Jeff is going to talk a lot about how we sort of market this and what scheduling works well and all of that. But I did want to spend just a little bit of time talking about, because I'm primarily responsible for the design of the podcast, meaning like the writing them, or if we're working with a guest, writing questions and all of that. So
to me, that's the hardest part.
I love that part.
Yeah. See, this is where it all depends on what your interests are. But yeah, the planning is, again, we go back into do as much as you can in the beginning to make it easier at the end. all of your planning you do makes them go so much smoother. So yeah, what goes into building out a plan?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit too here with our intended audience being some kind of learning within an organization or an external. But so one of the things I do just real practically is I have a template. I looked online for a lot of different ones, then I kind of ended up making my own. It's just a Word or Google document. But for me, what I found was mostly helpful was I write my own intro. Sometimes, depending on the topic, I can kind of just put some bullet points. Mm-hmm. For me personally, though, I found it falls somewhere in the middle. I don't script the entire thing, but if I just have bullet points, I tend to stumble over everything. Yep. But different people are different. Some people, absolutely, if you scripted it, they just couldn't handle it. Mm-hmm. They just prefer to do it off the cuff.
Right.
Other people are really good at scripting the whole thing, but still reading it in a conversational manner. Mm-hmm. So it just depends. But I found, at least for our audience, we're talking 2 to 3 segments, 5 to 10 minutes long. I kind of create a table. And I write those in there, the bullet points, I outline them. And then I put transitional statements or segues because I call that out. So first of all, if I'm sending that like to you, Jeff, mm-hmm. you're the guest, you can see, oh, this is the part where Miriam's going to start transitioning. I'm preparing myself for the next. Yeah. But also I found for myself, there is a plan and a design for these. And if I don't segue appropriately, my listeners they're not reading anything.
Yeah.
All they can do is listen. So yeah. You have to be, I think, even more intentional and overt to say, this is how this topic ties to the next thing. And yeah. I'm going to be really overt with that. So I write that out a lot.
I like that. It's just like a story. And it helps with editing too. I mean, segues are so important. You can't just cut all the way around because you're going to confuse your listener.
Right.
So yes, that is so important, adding in transitions and segues in terms of content.
Yeah. Well, and just again, making sure I'm really intentional with the listener so they can follow along well. Mm-hmm. But and, you know, when it comes to like the actual content, I think it depends on the structure. So a recent podcast I did all by myself. I actually wrote that entire thing. I scripted the whole thing just because it was only me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure I said it correctly. But that being said, I actually spent more time at home practicing reading it in a way that didn't feel like it was read. Mm-hmm. And those of you listening can be the judge of that. I think it was episode 20. You'll have to see what you think. But sometimes, though, I'll just create an outline. And I would say, for those of you in an organization, if you're trying to interview someone, I find it's important to provide those questions. Now, you might have follow-up ones that they're not aware of, but if you're really trying to create learning materials here, something that your listeners will be able to learn, you need to create an outline. You need to have certain questions asked and then answered. And so you want to give them some time to think about
them. For sure. Because again, that helps the content in the podcast. Anything you can do to help your guests will help the podcast.
Absolutely. But the other thing you want to be able to do is be able to pivot, which is a bit of thinking on your feet. Because we've all listened to podcasts where person asks a question and then the guest answers and they just move on.
Yeah.
And it's just like, mm-hmm.
But maybe
okay,
there's
next
more
question,
in there.
Next question. You're like, right. So you have to be able to pivot, maybe draw out a little more as needed. But then you also have to be able to, and this is the part I struggle the most with, is reining sometimes guests in because obviously they're passionate. And I think those questions kind of help focus them too.
I think you're right. I can't rein myself in. So you need these things to, because I can speak forever on something that I'm passionate about.
Which is what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not going to listen to a 4-hour podcast every day to someone just rambling. So being focused and getting the key topics through those questions is very important. And it helps guests a lot that aren't as familiar with podcasting.
Right. Right. And honestly, if you know, those of you that are listening are learning and development professionals, like you're familiar with that, right? We're literally designing a piece of learning content right now. So I start by thinking, what are my objectives for this podcast episode? And I write my questions to hit those objectives. Mm-hmm. So one really small kind of quick application I think of an interview that I've seen done really well is if you're working in an organization, a great thing to do is to interview key leaders. So it might be about an initiative you're rolling out. It might be to sit at the beginning of like some e-learning modules that are really important, but you're trying to convey to your participants, you know, here's the vice president of finance, and this is why this is so important that we all understand it. But what's great about a podcast is when I ask somebody in the C-suite to sit for a video shoot, I'm not saying like a lot of times they can do that and it's fine, but I have a harder time getting them to come do that because they're busy. It takes more time. It's more expensive. It takes, in your case, Jeff, your time, you set it all up, all those kind of things, where if I can say to someone in the C-suite, hey, can I grab 15 minutes of your time? And then, like we talked about earlier, I grab my mobile recorder and my microphone. I'm gonna get a yes a lot more. And that content can also be a little more evergreen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they're wearing.
No.
It doesn't matter. You know, so
doesn't matter where you are either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not, and right, these things can be done virtual, which is perfect. So I'm not advocating that this is the only, I just wanted to throw kind of a tidbit out there of there's ways that you can, or maybe you want to interview a subject matter expert. And instead of just putting that all in text, in an online course, you're interviewing them. And if we, our whole focus here has been the last three episodes, instructional led training. So if I can go out and interview a key leader and get some, and I send that to people, listen to this podcast before you come. Now we're going to discuss it. I've just increased their excitement for it. And it's not that hard to go get somebody and just let them talk for 15 minutes. I guess that would be my little plug. But regardless of the format, like how you want to use it in your organization,
just take use of it. Like make use of audio.
Of it.
And some of my favorite things that are coming through are news articles online that now they'll just read them for you.
I love that.
So anything that you would email at work that might be more important or you want more focus on, maybe to keep up pinned in a SharePoint or some single sign-on area, I love that idea to get just a little more personal with a real voice and a real person.
Well, and you, without even knowing it, provided one other little segue for me. But I would say if you are rolling out podcasts as is more of a planned, like a design, this is going to be ongoing, follow that up by creating some social space where they can be discussed. So we use Slack, but it could be a discussion forum. Like you said, it could be pinned in SharePoint, but some place for people kind of that digital water cooler to gather and to discuss the topic beyond just listening. So that's another quick way to kind of extend the use of your podcast and to create further learning around it. But so we discussed equipment, planning and writing here, some little ideas, but I can do all of that. And if nobody knows it's out there because I haven't marketed it well, and I haven't released it on time or nobody knows when it's coming. So I want to just wrap up by talking about that. If I'm a learning development professional and I'm releasing a podcast internally now, and I've also seen them for customers, but we're internally or to customers, whatever it might be, how do you recommend marketing a podcast to your organization or to your customer?
Yeah, lots of ways. Obviously, you have email and Slack as your base, you know, just sending it out to your employees. But I think that's a bare minimum.
Right, because I can easily ignore that.
Yeah. I would love to see if your company had a SharePoint or some kind of single sign-on screen or a newsletter even that went out. Just incorporate a section on that page for the podcast and say, hey, this week we're talking about this. And maybe even here's some other assets associated with that.
Right,
but here's the podcast for it. That way you start to build it into a routine for your employees. So when they're logging on, they see maybe some new content. They can take that 30 minutes to catch up on today's office news or whatever that topic is. I've even thought about doing, you know, physical QRs around the building.
Oh, I love that.
So just a link to the podcast and just... QRs are so nice now and natively built into phones where you can just scan it and it'll either pop up that audio in their native podcast app or just a web browser version. And then they can instantly get it without having to look for it, type it up and go.
Yeah, QR codes are fantastic.
Yeah. So physical signage in your office is a good way to internally promote it without, you know, going external.
Well, and one thing we did for this, and obviously this podcast was intended for an external audience, but even internally, if you're in a big enough company, well, maybe not, maybe even a small organization, do you recommend creating kind of a separate brand for it? Like something that maybe ties into the company brand or organization brand, but sets it apart or no?
Yeah, definitely depends on what you're doing, but I love being able to tie back your podcast to your brand. I think it's nice having its own entity, so it's not going to get confused and I'm thinking ahead, but like search results or emails, having it sponsored by or powered by, hosted by your company, but giving it a different name allows people to talk about it more directly and not confuse it with other things. So I think it's a very good option. It's something we've done here as well, is where we've named it relative to the content and it still ties in with what we do. And we matched in some of the brand colors and a look and feel with some of the waves or graphics we've used. So someone looks at it and goes, okay, I can see that relates if they're next to each other, but it's not overtly obvious.
Right. And specifically in our case, I mean, we also produce webinars and things like mm-hmm. that, but they have a slightly different audience and they also have a different goal, mm-hmm. which is more overt marketing for the company Mindspring. Mm-hmm. And our goal with the Learning Well was, like you said, powered by Mindspring or however else we want to say it, but that we really are just wanting to connect to the community and bring in experts and talk about learning. Yeah. And so it sort of helped us set it apart a little bit.
Yeah. And we try not to be pushy on this one, we hope, but we don't really relay a ton back to our company. We like to just stay in the focus and the topic that we live in because we love it.
So, we're not marketing products. This is, this is really sharing knowledge.
Yeah. In a way, this is our outlet. If you give us the opportunity to talk about it, we're going to talk about it.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. No, I agree.
And I think one other thing that is fun, and we've done this before, but feature internal employees on the podcast. That is a good way internally to get more engagement. And then when they can hear themselves or they can relate to other people, like, hey, I'm going to be on, you know, the newsletter, the podcast next week. I think that helps start it out quite a bit. People want to hear their voices.
Yeah.
Well, I should not say that. Everyone
cringes the first time, but they're excited about being on it. Yes. I totally agree.
Don't get worried about your voice. Right. It is completely normal. Everyone hates the sound of their voice when they first hear it, but that is not like that is how everyone else hears it. That's normal. Like that is how you sound.
And I would say that actually that has been kind of a fun touch point with clients too. So if in your organization you have experts in certain areas and maybe you put them on the podcast, that obviously like that's an opportunity to say to a client, hey, you're working with so-and-so, you know, you're working with Joe or whatever. Here's a podcast we just did with him. But also it just builds kind of that community sense, you know, like, oh, I'm listening to, and I'm working with this person at this company. And just, I think builds a little brand recognition too. So
for sure.
So we already touched on some of this, but like release schedule, you know, I think we have to balance practicalness of the time it takes to produce one of these, right? And like how aggressive, we started out kind of aggressive to build some momentum, one every week that could not be sustained. Mm-hmm. But what are your recommendations for release schedule? And like how, I can talk, I guess, in a little bit about how far we have to plan ahead, but what are your recommendations for that?
Yeah, so when you're first starting out, I think it's always smart to get three or four in the hopper before you even launch the first one. And that way you can quickly release three or four right away. And I wouldn't even do it like once a week. I would just launch them all at once. And that way someone can listen to your first one and continue on with a couple more things to get an understanding of your podcast and not just hear one and then make an assumption. So I like the idea of sending a few out right away when you're first starting out.
Do you recommend with that first one? I know we sort of laid some foundation, like this is why we're doing the podcast. This is what it's all about. Do you recommend someone sort of lays a foundation or do they just kind of jump in?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. A lot of podcast hosting platforms will even allow you to put on a featured podcast or a promo one that's maybe 2 minutes. And it's just a quick explanation of what you aim to do, what the podcast is about, what you can expect. And I think that's an amazing thing. You should do that for every podcast because that's basically your preview, your preview to your movie.
Yeah.
So I think that helps a lot with getting people to understand what you do.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So what about like release schedule once you've got three or four out there?
So I would say give yourself enough time to record and edit episodes ahead of time. Because recording schedules can always change, especially when you have guests. You never know what's going to happen. So you don't want to be stuck in a position where you're scrambling to get something recorded to stay on time. So I would typically recommend recording a couple episodes ahead if possible. Now, this is going to depend on your podcast because like we said, some need to be timely and relevant depending on the content. Right. But if you can, do a couple ahead of time. And if you can, like we talked about, record a few episodes at once to save time, as long as you can handle it and it keeps the energy up. But it's going to depend on how often you plan to record. I would just say keep it consistent.
Right.
I just like consistency.
Once a month, every other week, whatever it is.
Yeah. But more it's about preparing yourself to release them, I think, is the bigger issue is making sure your content is ready so you're not scrambling because a lot of work goes into recording and editing the episodes.
Yeah. So when we started thinking about this idea, I mean, we planned sort of a year's worth of episodes topic wise so that I knew I had a year's worth of content. I knew who I needed to contact certain months and how early. And then, you know, we tried to have sort of two ahead of time. I wouldn't say that we're even close to that right now, but you're also very fast with editing. But also, I think a big part of it is just when you have that plan, at least you know, because things change, like you said, and a guest who's like, oh, I can't do it now, or it's going to be a couple of weeks, or they're out of the country, or whatever the case may be. But I have that plan. I also, in my plan, put in several, like, obviously I solicit ideas from other people. And I even had a couple of people like, hey, I know a lot about this topic. I'd be happy to. And it's almost like keeping a couple episodes in reserve.
Yeah.
So if somebody, they might not sort of fit the theme or whatever, but if somebody backs out or we all get jammed up on time or whatever, we can kind of insert that one that's in reserve.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yep.
And then, so there is this thing too with the podcast. Now, if you're releasing it to your internal organization, and there's tools that allow you to, like, you don't have to put it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever, but if you are, then there's show notes. And I actually write two different documents. The show notes are just like a loose outline, but I would just recommend looking at the show notes for a lot of podcasts and kind of get your feel. Some podcast show notes detail everything. Others don't. Ours are pretty basic. If we always want to share the resources, if we list any like books or videos or, but other than that, I kind of just put the outline of what the podcast is, because I'm not going to rewrite the entire thing, because the point is to listen.
Right. Right. So I do appreciate some that do interviews with multiple people. So maybe they'll have a couple guests on a show and maybe it's like a longer 2-hour segment and they'll put timestamps in there.
Yes.
And I do appreciate that if I'm looking for a specific part of a very long podcast. Again, it's going to depend on what content you're building, but I love your recommendation of looking at podcasts you respect and enjoy and kind of see how they do it and mimic what you've liked.
Right. And then there's even just little things that go along with that, like keeping track of your episode number. So I have two documents for every episode. I have like what I call my script, which is the template, the outline that I'm, we're working from. And then I have my show notes, but I've got those labeled. And cause Jeff and I have often worked where like, wait, which one was that? And you know, you have to keep it right. You need your file naming system organized and all of that kind of thing. But at any rate, I hope for those of you that are listening that this has just given you maybe some excitement.
Yeah.
We love podcasting. I think it's a great way to share internally with your organization.
We love the sound of our voices.
Yes. No, we do not. We do not.
Like every that's time not why we're doing it.
Jeff sends me one, he's like, can you listen? I always listen to them before they release. I'm like, okay. But I wanted to, before we wrap up. So one of my favorite things that I hear on a lot of podcasts, they do something kind of fun at the end and it's more random, which is what gave me the idea to do What Are You Learning Well Now?
I know, I love this section.
Right, it's right. And I mean, I obviously, sometimes they're super random, but I can't tell you how many times listening to other podcasts, it's really that last segment that whatever it was they did, that I'm like, oh, wow. And it's not even that thought, but it sparked like another thought, or they mentioned a book and I look for that book or that article and then I like go down a rabbit hole. And so, Jeff, you've shared a wealth of experience, but can you share any new thing? Like, what's something kind of new you're exploring right now?
Oh, all the time. Let me try to focus one.
Okay.
So this one's relevant. Artemis 1, the rocket ship that is going to be going to the moon.
Yeah.
I've been very big on that because at the time of this recording, they had just scrubbed one of the launches. I love space. That's been a big passion of mine, just because there's infinite things to learn and we don't know. And I like not knowing.
Right.
There was some valve problem. They had to scrub it. But then I was looking, you know, why are we going back? It's been 50 years. What are we doing? And it looks like, you know, obviously there's scientific discovery at all times. The technology we have today is so much newer than the tin can they slung shot them across the last time. And the economic benefits that we're going to start finding from it, and then just inspiring new generations of scientists and astronauts. I think a lot of people think it's like, oh, let's just figure out how we can leave Earth, but it's more getting understanding of what is out there.
Yeah.
I think I just love that curiosity. So I love following along with a lot of the space launches, and there's a lot of high risk, but the payoff in terms of the scientific knowledge and exploration that we get, I think is just invaluable. And then I'll say another thing that I've been learning a lot about, and we mentioned the DJing stuff. I've been playing with lights a lot more.
Oh, so that's cool. There's a lot of science there.
Oh, yeah. A big part of music is, you know, your atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so your lights got to go with your music. And there are a lot of programs that link in all of your lights together, and they can either auto match it with your music based on waveforms.
Wow.
So it'll read a waveform and
try
to guess where certain things are.
Okay.
But I've been getting into custom and being able to preset lights and allowing like strobes to match the sound. So lights need a medium to go through. A light only does so much in a normal room, but when you start to add haze and fog in a room, it allows light, a medium, to travel through. So you can then see the beam of light traveling through the air instead of it throwing a color at the end,
right, you know?
So adding that atmosphere inside of a light and the type of light you use, whether it be a laser that shoots right through or it's more of a fill light that makes like a fog inside.
Sort of an atmosphere.
Yeah, you know? There's a lot you can do to pair that with music, and I've been really interested in the combination of the two and how that creates emotion. So it's been really fun to play with that.
Yeah, well, I can hear in your voice the excitement and just like being curious is huge, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember where I was when the Challenger accident, but even before that, just being so fascinated by space. And not everyone is, but I think you're exact. It just is sort of like this unlimited potential and inspiration. Mm-hmm. I think it's very exciting for younger people to like feel that new inspiration. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe we'll have to do an episode on lighting, although we're going to have to work harder to tie that to learning.
That's going to be a tough
but
one to do
I
on
mean,
podcast.
It's all part of mood, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Creating an actual experience.
I'm all about custom lighting. I have it in my room. When I wake up, it turns on like a sunset thing. And I would highly recommend you do that in classrooms.
Yeah.
One of my best friends is a teacher, and we have played his whole room with lights. He's got it on an iPad switch. So when they do cahoots or games, he can make the room go crazy. He can set a mood for like if we're focusing on something, and he can do colors if it's kind of a low atmosphere. And so I really do think there's a lot of science in adding color to your walls and in a learning environment.
No, absolutely. Color plays huge. And we just often, unfortunately, sell ourselves short and think of it as just on screen. But the whole focus, this is a perfect way to end, because the whole focus of these three episodes has been sort of more in-person ILT or virtual ILT. And just ending thinking about sound and color is a great way. We don't have time to discuss it all, but to think about all of that plays into what's happening when you have people together in a space and how they can learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. So, and Jeff is always present on all of our podcasts, so he'll be chiming in here or there as we go through. But I want to thank all of you, our listeners. We know your time is precious, and we thank you so much for joining us today.
See ya.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.